Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continue my coverage of Augmented World Expo 2026. Today's episode is with Devin Marble of Arbor XR. And so Arbor XR is one of those small businesses that is also like in this sector of training. And training is one of those things that has always been a thing that's a no-brainer for a lot of different enterprises where you can offer better types of training for all sorts of different things. And so I had a chance to sit down with Devin Marble. And what was interesting is that we talked about training, but also like this larger thing around how Meta's kind of jumped out of enterprise. And so they basically have this cliff of 2030 where they're no longer going to be necessarily supporting anything that's happening in enterprise. And so it's a bit of a confusing situation and a bit of uncertainty in terms of like what's happening with some of the biggest players like Meta for what kind of like new headsets or support may they be offering here in the future. And so it's kind of like a weird situation. So we end up talking about the broader XR industry and all the different headsets and platforms and trade-offs that are out there, but also just some of the different benefits that people are seeing in context of these huge enterprise deployments for XR and for training. And so they had lots of different information like case studies and numbers, which actually are pretty rare when you go out and think about like a lot of times these companies will do these different types of training, but they don't necessarily want to always talk about it. So it's always great to be able to sit down with someone like Devin to get some of the numbers and some of the different clients that they have in terms of how big some of these different deployments are, just because there is this kind of diffusion of technology that goes through the academic ideas into the enterprise and then eventually into the consumer market and then eventually into like mass ubiquity. And I think a lot of ways Meta had this concept of where they were just kind of skip over different aspects of the enterprise market. But I think it's really crucial to kind of hear what some of the different enterprises are needing and wanting, and that's actually driving, you know, viable businesses in a lot of ways. And whatever Meta ends up doing, that I feel like XR and training is still going to be definitely a thing, just because that's kind of like where it all began in terms of the military and flight simulators and taking the extent of that you can communicate different aspects of training and the transfer of knowledge by allowing people to embody these different scenes is just something that is unparalleled for any other communication media. So XR and training are something that is going to continue to grow, but there's a little bit of like headwinds and uncertainty when it comes to some of the biggest players. So we talk about that larger context of what's happening within enterprise training and XR. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Devin happened on Tuesday, June 16th, 2026 at Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
My name is Devin Marble. I am the Enterprise Growth Lead for Arbor XR, and I help large organizations or educational institutions solve their XR deployment problems. So it's more than just what headset. It's what goes on it. How long do you expect this to last? How do we make this work beyond the pilot? And how do we actually measure the success of your program?
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into this space.
Yeah, so I started out as an ISV, actually. I used to work for a company called VR Patients in the medical VR training space. I did that for almost 5 years. And they scooped me up from an educational institution. So before that, I was an educator and a teacher, and I was working in clinical research, and I built a VR program for a community college. So I do that, and then VR Patients scoops me up, and then I learn the go-to-market. I learn how hard it is for ISVs to not just sell their product, but sell the ecosystem. Because when you're creating software and you're trying to sell to a school or to a company that they should do VR training, they have also not touched the hardware yet. And so you have to sell them into the whole vertical, which is a real lift. And then you have to train them on your software. And so that was a real learning experience. And I think education in general, and particularly healthcare, is really true to my heart. Because when you deploy that type of XR training, you're like saving lives, or you're helping students and they're entering the workforce and getting jobs. That translates directly into enterprise. So I think that that's why when I finished up my tenure at VR Patients, I came up on 5 years and was lucky enough to join the team at Arbor XR to serve all enterprise deployments, all education deployments, kind of be Switzerland, where I'm not trying to sell one piece of software. I'm trying to help people solve problems, almost like a solutions provider, right? And it doesn't matter what ISV you buy. It doesn't matter what headset you buy or if you're doing a wearables. What matters is that we help you solve that integration problem, that architecture problem, so you're successful.
Awesome. And maybe you could give a bit more context of the history of Arbor XR and how it came about, and what was the sort of origin story for Arbor XR?
Yeah, the origin story of Arbor is these incredible three founders, Brad and Jordan and Will Stackable, and they're still here today running the show. And they started this company called Springboard, which was like a location-based VR thing, I think. And after that turned into Arbor XR. And I mean, I think they are one of the most tenured companies in XR. I think they've been going for a decade now, maybe 12 years, which is kind of like akin to Engage XR, right? Those are the kind of two standing tall and strong for the long haul, some of the companies out there. So yeah, you know, they started out in this location entertainment. You go somewhere, you're putting on a headset, and then the recognition that that hardware needs management of sorts. And then that turning into, well, let's do this wirelessly. Let's do this for everything. Everything in XR anyways. I mean, an MDM in and of itself is not new. There's Microsoft Intune. There's a number of other MDMs that are out there that are just intended to manage iPads or laptops and phones at organizations. And as soon as you insert this new technology that is just different, it goes on your face. It goes on your eyes. It's a different beast to manage. You don't just need to know the serial number and the location. You need to know what the content is on that headset or on that device, and what do they see? What are they doing? Yeah, and how often are they doing it? Because it costs money to deploy XR. And if you're going to build out that program at a school or at a company, you need to be able to prove that you're solving a problem and that it was worth the build and worth the spend.
And how would you describe the different types of customers that you have at Arbor XR? What kind of industry verticals do you see most of the action there?
Yeah, I mean, we're holding a paper right now looking at some of the programs that we do. And we got companies like Mars, the VA, Delta, Bank of America, Kellanova, Axon, PwC. That's all enterprise, right? We do a lot of education as well. I would probably say that enterprise tends to solve the harder problem than education does, because typically an education deployment is enough for a class or a couple of classrooms, or even if you did a department, you know, students are on site. It's not common for students to receive headsets and take them home. So they check them out. They use them at their location for their tool for school. Whereas, you know, a large company like Mars or Bank of America might get 5,000 headsets and deploy them across the nation for employee engagement training or onboarding. And that is a much larger problem to solve. And I think that that speaks to kind of like our customer base, is that when you solve for the much harder problem, it trickles down. Like those features and those solutions trickle down to even the smallest customer. So it's really easy for someone to jump on Arbor XR for a couple of dollars a month at an educational level and to scale all the way up to the level of Mars or the level of Axon and have thousands of headsets solving problems and saving them millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, I know that talking to people like Shauna Heller, who kickstarted some of the enterprise offerings at Oculus at the time, now Meta, Oculus themselves got into the enterprise space a little late. And from my assessment, they kind of ignored, or at least were a bit antagonistic to enterprise, in the sense where I think they wanted to skip past the enterprise market and go straight to consumer. And so they had the Oculus for Business, and then they killed it off. And then it was basically like an era where there was basically no official solutions, and then Arbor stepping in, and then they came back in, and then they started to do this whole thing of like, oh, you can only have our MDM solution. And then they basically took a step back, which I imagine that Arbor XR probably took a bit of a sigh of relief that Meta was no longer going to be directly interfering with that. So I'm just curious how you start to tell that story of Meta's whole journey into enterprise. And it seems like that Arbor is now going to have more control rather than still going through Meta, or maybe they're still in the picture. I'm just trying to get a sense of what's happening there.
So you're talking about something that gives me heartburn. I want to start by saying that I really love Meta's product. I think that they have an extremely battle-tested headset and their glasses, because that technology got reverse engineered into those glasses. And so they work really good. I've tested some of the newer VR hardware that's out there, and there's just simple things about the user experience that Meta's just got down, because they have, you know, 82 versions of their firmware that have fixed the hand tracking and the resetting of the room so that way people don't get confused. And That initial user experience is so important for VR adoption. Now, the heartburn is, I think I would agree with you that Meta thought, I guess I don't know if you were saying this, but my feeling is that Meta thought that enterprise was going to be easier. I think that Meta is really good at what they do, and they make billions of dollars really fast. That is not how enterprise works. And if you stick into enterprise for the long haul, you could be the multi-billion dollar standard that everyone has to use. But you have to choose to enter the enterprise arena for the long haul. Understand that it's not a hockey stick. And when you arrive at the appropriate level, because you have shown that you're the architecture that's sticking around, and you're going to continue to pour resources into the problems that enterprises see that are meaningful to them around security or privacy at a scaled deployment, that's how you become like the Microsoft Office suite of the workforce. Or, you know, you're just kind of like the operating system layer. I don't believe that Meta had the appetite to stick into it that long. I mean, Oculus for Business was some significant headaches. There's so much. There was sideloading, and then there was permissions and web buckets, and it was really challenging. But we got customers in, and ISVs got customers. They surmounted those hurdles. That wouldn't happen in a consumer market. If you went to the store to buy an iPhone and like you had to do an authentication and you had to have like a remote demo and then you had to like get a PO just to buy your device and like your context didn't automatically sync and go right through to it, you would not buy the iPhone. You would go somewhere else. But that is not what happened in the XR market. People climbed up over the hill and they pushed and they pushed. And then it got exciting when Meta did Horizon Managed Services for a moment, because it appeared as though they were going to streamline the friction. But then they added on an expense. And I think it was an intentional one. Look, Meta's been subsidizing the cost of the headset for years. And so they're losing money on it. And they're like, well, we'll make our money on their version of the MDM, the software door. And, you know, it quickly proved that that was untenable. They just weren't willing to pay that. And so then they pivoted and said, well, we'll make it free for education for like a certain number of years. And that was helpful. But the number of organizations that ended up on Horizon Managed Services didn't have the features that they need, those battle-tested features that they need to control things. And it ended up feeling clunky and challenging. And you need an infrastructure to serve those tickets. And that's a whole separate lift. Then you fast forward to for 1 year we did HMS. And, you know, January 2026 hits and Meta says, we're out of enterprise and we're not going to support HMS anymore. It's, you know, it's deprecated. It's going to be deprecated by January 4th, 2030. You start to ask, what does that mean? There are, I don't know, 100,000 or more headsets right now in that Meta ecosystem. Many, many, many on an MDM like Arbor XR. So if HMS is the gatekeeper and it goes away, what happens to those headsets? Do they factory reset to a consumer device? And what happens to a large enterprise deployment saving millions of dollars a year? And it's growing every year, right? The need is absolutely insane. Kent, I have more. I cannot keep up with the demand in terms of like outreach and meetings and scoping. And it is more than I can handle. And I'm one person on the Arbor team. And so I have heartburn around what's going to happen in 2030. And between now and 2030, when you know that there is kind of like a cliff that's coming, enterprises who think long-term don't want to invest in a cliff. And then there's a separate issue. So then let's just say that an enterprise is fine with it. They're like, you know what? Meta will figure it out. It's at the right price point for us. And we're not going to deploy a scaled XR program at double or triple the cost right now. So, because it's a new field, so we're going to do Meta. Okay, so they choose Meta. There's a separate issue that I don't know if you've experienced, that I've experienced with a number of enterprises, and it's typically large ones with a large security requirements. They have a important IT department that knows everything that everybody does with their, you know, employee emails. That will have an enterprise organization, very large, a Fortune 100 company, and they've got funds, they have a plan, and they're going to get hundreds, sometimes thousands of headsets, and they choose Meta, and everything's in place. The software's in place. The procurement channel's in place. They're ready to go. And then they go to claim their Horizon Managed Services account for free. They go to log in and create it. And it could be the first time or the 10th time that they've done this. And they don't know because the organization is so big that someone else in another part of the country could have done this at a different time in a different year. But they go to the HMS, you know, forwork.meta.com. They go to create and claim their account. And they use their employee domain, their employee email, because you have to have a work email. And they get served a screen that says, you already have an HMS organization. Your admin has been notified and they'll let you in. But the problem is that their admin wasn't notified and they don't have an organization because the request for the HMS account got blocked by the company's IT department due to HMS's architecture. There's something about how HMS was built and what it's connected to that is getting flagged by the IT departments. And so they say, no, we do not allow our company's secure data cloud to touch that Horizon Managed Services system. That immediately blocks any internal champion and any department who has budget and has a program and has a plan from managing their Meta headsets, even on a third party, because HMS is the gate. You cannot get on Arbor unless you get that free account from HMS. So what you have is a scramble. You have these enterprise people who are like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do XR. We believe in the proof. They want to save millions of dollars. And so they start to look at switching. And many of these organizations may already have 50, 60, even 100 or more headsets. But guess what? They're all like consumer-grade headsets in developer mode that they're experimenting on. You can't scale that because you have to put them into developer mode and plug them in your computer and test your builds. Because a lot of these large orgs, they have builders. They buy software and they build software. So when you ask me, how is it with Meta? And you know, what does that mean? What's it like? And how do you feel about it? It is, I want them to reduce the friction because the market is here. They want it. And now that Meta is increasing their prices of their hardware to kind of like meet the actual market cost, so they're not losing so much money on it, the gap of price between them and a competitor is closing. And so when you have the option between two choices and you're no longer half the price or a third the price of another competitor, they choose the hardware, they choose the partner that is the lowest friction with the best support. And today, in the current state, with HMS, I think, having one systems architect that works on it and no other support and a cliff in 3.5 years, today, that partner is not a Meta choice. That feels like a risk in enterprise and in many large educational institutions. I that's as best I could do because I'm very pleased to help any customer win with XR, no matter what logo they want to buy. But I cannot facilitate a customer entering into something that's not going to work in 2 years or that is going to cause them an extreme amount of friction and a lot of dollars and man hours to resolve.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that they thought it was going to be easy. I think they just were prioritizing the consumer market over the enterprise and not seeing the enterprise as a fundamental stepping stone into how and the lessons learned there could be fed into the consumer. It was more of like, I think they, well, we don't know for sure, but it just seemed like from their actions that it wasn't a top priority. It was like they want to hyperscale and get at a certain level with the consumer market. And even having at some point the privacy policy forced onto like these enterprises in a way that doesn't actually work in terms of their security model. There were certain phases like that where certain decisions were made, like they were prioritizing this other kind of mindset other than what the enterprises actually wanted or needed. So yeah, that's sort of my take on it. But it sounds like that there's, for most people coming in, they may be going in with, say, Pico or what were some of the other, or Vive. What do you see as what kind of like headsets and what kind of action you're seeing?
Well, before I get into that, I just want to say one more thing. And that's that, look, throughout 2025, I had a significant amount of support as an ISV. I was an ISV, right? We were building the software for nursing schools and I had a tremendous amount of support from Meta. I had a ISV manager. They were pushing hard into channel. Like, everything seemed to be going in the right direction. I just don't think it was going fast enough. And I think that that's what the goal was. It was like, we're going to make HMS. We're going to go into enterprise. And we're going to try it for 1 year and see if we can make some money. And, you know, they had these very large targets to hit on sales of headsets. And I think it just takes more than 12 months. And if they weren't planning to go full steam for more than 12 months, and AI is coming, right? They have to devote resources to AI too. I could see how they might choose to pivot. But I think if they're going to pivot, they need to, I would recommend, reducing the friction of all of the enterprise users that want to continue to use the hardware, especially if they're not going to monetize their Horizon Managed Services, then let the enterprise users use the hardware, and they will. Okay, so what other hardware is out there? I really like what's coming to market right now. So I want to start with the Samsung Galaxy XR is really a phenomenal product. I think that they're early with the firmware updates, right? So I talked a little bit about Meta's firmware updates being so battle-tested that, you know, they're in version 82, and Samsung's new. But they're built on this Android ecosystem, and it is easy to work with, and it's easy for an independent software vendor to change their software and push it to a Samsung because they don't have to learn a new coding language to do that. And it's light, it's comfortable. I don't mind the battery puck being in your pocket. That seems to be a thing that a lot of these headsets are doing nowadays. And so it's a non-issue because you gain so much on your head in terms of weight and heat. And so moving that battery pack is great. It is high quality in terms of like what you see and how you feel, and the fidelity and the hand tracking is really good. And you can get controllers for it, which is important for some enterprise deployments. So I like the Samsung Galaxy XR. I recommend checking that out. The price point's great. I think it's like $1,800. That's a lot more than a Meta, but I would put it pretty close. It's approaching Apple Vision Pro quality. And so Apple Vision Pro is what, $4,000?
$3,500. Yeah, depending on the size, yeah.
And taxes. And then I would say the Pico is tried and true. If your organization is comfortable or is approved to work with Pico, I would highly recommend them instantly because they're a couple $100 more than a Meta Quest 3. They're completely equivalent. They're enterprise ready. They have got their firmware figured out, and it works very, very well. Pico is not the best solution if your end users are going to, let's say a school is going to give students headsets upon admission, and for 4 years they use their headsets in college, and when they graduate, they get to keep it. I wouldn't recommend a Pico because it's enterprise only. They don't have access to like a game store, and you know it's kind of useless after they graduate. But for deployments that remain enterprise, Pico's phenomenal. And I got to try the Pico Swan at the IGS summit by the VRARA. And I'll tell you what, man, that device is legit. They are doing something unique in terms of their compute. They have some incredible, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say about it, but the compute is very powerful and it is so lightweight. It is small and it is really good hand tracking, and it is going to be a competitor for sure. Yeah, it does have a separate, I don't know what they're going to do with battery or puck, but it does have a separate, you know, little puck thing, just like the Galaxy and just like the Apple Vision Pro. I think a lot of them are heading in that direction because their recognition is that you need the power, but people want to wear these headsets for a longer period of time. So they have to be cooler and lighter and more comfortable. So that's one to watch out for when it hits. I want to talk a little bit about the HMS Singray. So HoloLens bowed out, right, or maybe fell out of the market, but there are a number of enterprise deployments that need an augmented reality device that does not impede the vision of the frontline worker. And what I mean by that is you might have a frontline worker that's working in a low light environment, or they are trip hazards on the floor, or it's a complex machine, or they could put their hand in something and squish their fingers. And there's union rules and laws, and they are not allowed to put anything in front of their eyeballs. But a piece of glass is different. And if it actually helps them be more safe, now you're talking. And so when HoloLens left, it's a gap in the market right now. And the HMS Singray is so far, I have not tried the X-Real Aura yet. I'm looking forward to trying that. Much smaller form factor. But that Singray has that heads-up display that you can flip up. That's super important in workforce and enterprise. So I think that they're going to scoop up immediately. I think they're going to scoop up part of the market that HoloLens filled. And They don't have the same barriers in terms of like where they're sourced. I believe they're out of Taiwan, I think. Oh, no, they're Japanese. Sorry, they're out of Japan. And so that's, in terms of the enterprise level, that's an important question. Just to be frank, there are a number of enterprises that won't purchase from China. And so not having that friction point, that barrier is important. That's one to watch. And then I would draw your attention to a new one that just caught my attention today here. It is the, I think it's called the Vitturi, and it's by Rana. They're over in the booth over there. I can walk you over there. They did a partnership with NVIDIA, and they are smart glasses, but they are shaped like safety glasses. And they have cameras and AI, but they are all in one. So they don't have a separate like phone that you have to connect to. And they're using NVIDIA's LLMs, and those are local and on-prem, secure. And that is a really, really strong package, because now you have these glasses that are completely clear. You have a subject matter expert that is AI that is trained locally on a model that is secure, and it's in your ear, and it can see what you're doing, and it can walk you through. You can ask it questions. It can give you your steps on your task. And at the front line, that's a big deal. So I would encourage you to go check out that device. It's really cool. It's right over there.
Do you have anything with the HTC Vives or any of their products?
I got to try the HTC, the Vive Eagle smart glasses. I think they're going to focus on those this year and next year. You know, Meta sold so many Ray-Ban displays that everyone else wants a piece of that pie. And so I think the Vive Eagles are equivalent in this smart glasses game. In terms of their VR and their mixed reality, I have not seen an innovation coming. I think that Vive tends to pride itself in providing hardware that kind of stays the same on purpose. So organizations don't feel like they're buying something that's going to turn into a paperweight in 4 years or 2 years. I do think that that can come at the detriment of innovation sometimes, where now the devices start to feel a little more clunky or a little bit older, or not as long of a battery life, not as fast of a compute, because technology is moving really fast. So I'm eager to learn if Vive is going to continue to invest into the XR market. I don't know the answer to that, but you did make me think of something right now. I would keep an eye on Samsung again. I would be surprised if they didn't enter the smart glasses market and see what they come up with, especially with their display and lenses technology that they have access to. I think they might be formidable in the maybe something equivalent to the Meta Ray-Ban displays, or even the Ray-Bans, the smart glasses. They might do something.
And does Arbor XR work with Apple Vision Pro at all, or is that just more a part of the Apple ecosystem that you don't have access to?
That is something that's on our roadmap. We are having conversations with Apple. I think it's taken a long time for enterprises to scale up a little bit. It is a build for us in order to support iOS. We're interested. We're eager to do it. I think it's an eventuality, especially with the wearables. And we do come across some customers that have iOS approved in their secure ecosystem because of they use iPads. And so those same organizations are starting to explore smart glasses, and XR is a little more mature for them now. And so, you know, when we have an organization that comes to us and they want to manage like 2 or 4 headsets because they're so expensive, that becomes hard to justify for us, right, on the development side. But I think that it's maturing and it's had some time to stick. And then when you have organizations like, I'm just going to make up a logo that's an example, like Toyota, that wants to visualize very, very high fidelity and with accuracy, like their engine or their car, and Apple Vision Pro is really good for that. And Toyota will have the budget to do a couple hundred of those, and that needs management. So that, plus if Apple does do their smart glasses and wearables and how those are going to sync, you know, they have an ecosystem, so things connect. It might make a lot more sense. I think it does make a lot more sense for us to partner with Apple and work with their products.
In today's keynote, Ori showed a slide saying here are some sectors that are growing, and one of those was training and simulation, which Arbor, a lot of your end clients are actually using XR for training simulation.
Yep.
Just curious if you had any statistics, or how do you start to tell the story of what's happening with training and simulation within the context of XR?
Yeah, I actually have some right here. So Delta is a really phenomenal example. So they use virtual reality for their de-icers. They have like world-class de-icers. And so when it snows in snowy parts of the country, they have to like park the plane. You get on the plane, they park it for a second over by these like guys that spray your plane with a chemical hose. I don't know what it is. And it takes time, but they have to be really good and on time and on point and ready to rock. And typically, in order to do that training, they have to park a plane and get a hose and fill it with like recycled water. And they have to fly people all around the country to get to the location and do their training. They're doing a lot of that in VR right now. And so they can train their de-icers and they're seeing some significant improvements. So they call it like a check per day and people earning more checks, more like check-ins. And so they're doing this training and it's an increase of 15% more de-icing checks per day, which would account to like 2,650 more checks in one season. And you want that repetition. It's so important for people to understand that when it comes to simulation training, it is less about replacing or learning a physical skill in VR and more about repetition, creating critical thinking and judgment skills and a memory for something that you might do infrequently. And so repetition, we are very good at that as humans. And so that's what VR facilitates. Let's see. Oh, Bank of America was another one. They trained over 200,000 employees at 4,000 locations nationwide. And they onboarded 2,000 new hires and they did all of this in VR. That is expansive and incredible. And so when you think about what those types of companies are trying to do, they're trying to facilitate high engagement for their new hires, for a higher retention rates, better quality of satisfaction at work, and then also better accuracy of your employees, right? They are good employees who feel connected, maybe remotely or to other locations. They learn the standard operating procedures faster. They feel like they're a part of a community and they get to actually do things. They get to get in and practice and try and pretend to be a bank teller or have a difficult conversation and then talk to HR and then do a concert in VR and like and hang out with their friends and their colleagues. So that's really cool for a large organization to invest in something like that. And just consider the cost of like an on-site for 200,000 employees versus the cost of doing that virtually. And is the output as good? Are the employees feeling confident? Do they do better work or they do equivalent work? If they at least do equivalent work, that's a worthwhile investment for the company. You know, the other thing here, I would encourage a company or a school to highly consider you to look into this vertical of XR, VR, wearables, because you're also exposing students and a workforce to new frontline technology. And what's a better way to do that than something that's actually applicable to their work day? So even if an employee moves on from Bank of America to a new location, they can say, I've used VR. I've done it for training. I've done it for onboarding. I know what it's like. That's valuable in the workforce because that VR probably facilitated access to AI, communicating to a smart assistant and what that's like. I mean, typically you only get access to that through a laptop computer. So that's really valuable.
So in the broader XR industry, it feels like there's a lot of endings that are happening right now, layoffs, but also like shutting down of like Rec Room, Altspace a couple of years ago. We've got Horizon World. So there's seems to be like the endings of some stuff, but there's also new beginnings. So I feel like there's a bit of a liminality that's happening in terms of like where things are going, where things are at. It also seems like the consumer space may be in this kind of like waning phase or like I don't know what's happening in the consumer space, but it definitely feels like the enterprise space seems to be at least a potential for growing. I don't know to what degree, or at least that there seems to be a little bit more momentum there based upon some of these numbers and results that you're seeing. So just curious how you start to tell the story of like what's happening in the XR industry, especially when there's not much transparency for having data or information to get real insight as to what's happening in the industry. So just curious to hear how you start to tell the story of what's happening.
I think that location-based VR settings had an immediate issue, which is that your average consumer sitting at home in front of the TV has not seen or used a VR headset. And so the thought that they would go somewhere and put on some VR and play, while if they actually did, it would be super fun and super value and exciting, they're probably not having that inception, right? That idea. And that prevents a location-based VR place from just growing organically. It requires a lot of work to learn and to teach people and to engage them and outreach to them. So I think that they kind of fell into this problem where, well, I'll ask you this question. Kent, have you, not at AWE, but in your normal day, have you ever seen someone at a Starbucks with a headset on?
I have not, no.
Okay. And you're looking for it.
Well, I don't usually go to Starbucks, but maybe that's part of it. Well, so I.
But that's just a metaphor for any public location.
I've seen someone on an airplane.
Okay, an airplane.
So, yeah.
That's decent, right? Okay, so. And how long you been doing this?
It's about 12 years, yeah.
Okay, so 12 years, seen a couple people on an airplane with a VR headset. If it's not a part of the consumer normal daily life, it's not something they're going to think of on their own. And I think that that's why smart glasses are going to be so important. They're kind of like the crossover between putting something on your face that's connected in with cameras and putting a whole screen computer that immerses you and you can't see the world on your face. And so without that in the consumer world as a norm, I think it's hard for location VR to grow organically. And they can only sustain for so long where the spend to collect a customer gets so high and there's a brick and mortar situation. And I'm sure COVID did not help, right? Post-COVID was a problem. And that was a build back from 2020 to 2023. And that probably knocked people down a little bit. So that's probably what they fell under. We might see a resurgence. I think that in like 3 years, there's probably room for a new location-based VR to pop up. Maybe it'll be smart glasses. Maybe it'll be a movie theater that you go and your every movie theater becomes an IMAX because you can grab a headset and you can spend a few extra dollars for a headset and watch a 600-foot screen if you wanted. So I think something might be coming.
And then finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of XR might be and when it might be able to enable?
The ultimate potential is that we train a healthcare organization that saves thousands of lives, that we empower chemistry class to visualize a cell they've never seen before, and then they invent a cure. That's the ultimate for me. Like, that is the community problem solve for humanity that I think is what VR can do. And if you don't believe me, go put on a VR headset and stand inside of a heart and watch the blood flow and tell me you're not going to remember that. And if you can seed a smart, intelligent person with something like that that's fascinating, and then they can build, it's game changing. Look up how Google did a research paper on vibe coding in XR. It's coming. Your average person is going to be able to vibe code an XR deployment. What are you going to do then? What are they going to build? So it's going to change the game.
Awesome. Anything else left unsaid you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, go to arborxr.com and jump on board. Be a part of the ecosystem so we can support you as an ISV, so we can help you solve problems on deployments, and we can connect you to the right people, because we're Switzerland here. We're here to connect everybody to the right deployment and help you win.
Awesome. Well, Devin, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kent.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.